don't know if that actually picks it up. Hold on, this is pretty. Welcome back, everybody, to Independent Incidentals, Ladles and Germs. I feel like I haven't said Ladles and Germs in quite a while. It's been quite a bit since I've donned the Ladles and Germs, so now you have donned the Ladles and Germs. Welcome back, everybody. Ladles and Germs. Do you guys think you should get a different name? Type 1 in chat if you... this is not a Twitch stream. Type 1 in chat if you think that you guys should get a different name. I'm open to suggestions. I'm kind of curious if the Ladles and Germs, the epithet of Ladles and Germs is a little bit too childish, coy, you know, that kind of thing, too little bit too on the nose, as it were. I'm always open to suggestions. Oh, good, we got one in the chat who says absolutely not. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. Very important. Very important to keep the brand. I think it's a brand. I think it's actually a brand. I think a lot of this specific bit is just a brand to keep everyone entertained, as it were. You know how it is. But what am I rambling about? Today we're talking about psychedelic rock. I'm actually not too sure if this is going to be an missing miscellaneous episode, because here's the thing. Here's the thing. I personally am quite burned out. I don't know if you can tell from my voice, because I'm always radiating charisma and pristine efficiency. I'm like clockwork, you know? I come in every week, you expect me here, I do my thing and I leave. But deep down, you know, deep down, I'm just a little guy. I'm yay high. I'm trying to imagine me having like my hands out right now, trying to indicate how high I am. I'm like yay high spiritually. I'm like this big spiritually, and I get a little burned out sometimes. It was definitely more of a thing 2 semesters ago. I know that much. Yeah, during the winter term specifically, it was a doozy. Winter 2025 was an absolute doozy. However, this is not as bad, for the record. This is like a sort of median zone. I feel like I'm in the eye of the hurricane right now. Everything around me is kind of collapsing in front of me, but at the same time, I feel like I can hold myself up pretty well. But that's besides the point. I think most of what's been keeping me sane for the past couple of weeks have been 2 things. King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, which is a psychedelic Australian rock band that has a lot of albums, which we will talk about for this episode, because it's the only thing we'll be able to talk about, and Silk Song. Again, this is the game I talked about last week, where I still haven't beaten it. It's crazy. It's taken this long. The game has opened up so much, but at the same time, I feel like I'm finally almost at the end game, and it almost doesn't feel real, you know? Like, I have, like, 50 hours logged in this game, and it feels like I still have barely scratched the surface. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Perhaps I need to go back and do a few more runs, you know, just to get a good feeling for it. But unfortunately, I have a shorter run, so that's not going to happen. Another thing, too, specifically in relation to that, is where's the schedule? Where's my itinerary? I had it last month. I was going to get pretty good with it, but I don't have one this month. I didn't upload one this month. Uh-oh. Unfortunately, like I said, burnout, main thing. I have to pace myself a little bit, so I'm keeping it kind of shrouded. I'm keeping the future a bit shrouded for now, just so I can kind of wiggle myself out of having to reschedule everything, annoying stuff like that where I have to, like, update the Instagrams and stuff like that. I like to just have, like, one big thing. But at the same time, I need to be open to the idea of having to switch stuff around. So I'm going to make a schedule for both November and early December. Because as you all know, school's out for the summer. school's out for the summer! You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that thing. So It's not for the summer, actually. It's for the winter. So I don't know what Bon Jovi was thinking. That bozo. Anyway, he's a good guy. I'm sure he's a good guy. I'm losing my mind. Why is it so hot in here? I thought we fixed the AC, but not no. There's literally no coldness in this room at all. I feel like I'm being cooked again. It's fine. Don't worry about it. So, the main things on the list right now, which we're going to talk about psychedelic rock, specifically how I got into it, and what was the kind of evolution going in and further into this genre specifically, because it's kind of been the mainstead. It's been a bit of a homestead for the past 5 years. A lot of psychedelic rock influences kind of permeated down my entire spine and kind of infused itself into my brain cords. So, we'll take a little break from video games, and we'll dive right into the music. How about that? So, first thing on the list is a little bit of backstory. A little bit of preamble before we get into the actual meat and potatoes. I, for one, was not really into music, surprisingly. Very surprisingly. I was a very straight-edge kid, specifically in regards to... I'm talking about music like it's a drug. It is, for the record. It definitely is. But... music, the idea that I had some, like, if I never actually had like a favorite artist when I was young, right? I've went through it all throughout the entire of elementary and even a little bit into high school. Like, I never really had an artist where I really clinged on to them, you know? It was sort of like something for other people to have, right? It's like, I'm not allowed to have a favorite artist for some reason. Like, I thought that I wasn't really that special in that specific way. So all the kind of stuff I listened to was things that were just kind of permeating on the radio. Like, that's pretty much it. Like, I didn't really have anything beyond that. Is that a lie? I'm trying to remember specifically what I was interested in. Like, probably, like, the Hollow Knight... not the Hollow Knight soundtrack. The Undertale soundtrack or something. Minecraft parodies. Maybe. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's weird. It creates all... Like, the video game boom within that era where, you know, you had, like, Bendy and the Ink Machine and Undertale and all these kind of... Five Nights at Freddy's. All these kind of cringe games that... kind of permeated and then latched onto popular culture and created a cocoon around itself, almost. So you couldn't visibly see the culture that it was trying to imitate, but I somehow was able to obtain it through osmosis, right? Like, for example, like Captain Sparkle's Minecraft parody of Fallen Kingdom, right? It's like, I didn't know it was Coldplay, but once I figured out that Coldplay wrote it, I was like, oh, right? I kind of had to reverse engineer what was being played and what my eardrums were receiving, in a sense. So it wasn't Coldplay that created my idea of their song, but it was in fact Fallen Kingdom, created by Captain Sparkles, which was a Minecraft parody on YouTube, which then reformulated my idea of what it was in the first place, right? It's a sort of pseudo-culture, the micro-culture that exists within the internet that is going to be really interesting going forward, especially for the Gen Alphers, especially for the Gen Alphers, right? Cause they don't freaking know what they're listening to, man. They got Garden of Bamban. They got Poppy Playtime. They don't know what they're listening to. They don't know what the influences were from those. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Specifically with the idea of 50s like, SCP style, like, you know, more so like. What was that one? The Twilight Zone kind of stuff, you know? Like, specific things that are kind of paranormal and that activity and all that kind of stuff. It's like, it's permeated in a completely different way than to what it was back in, let's say, the 50s, which is really interesting to me, right? So speaking about that specifically, I came into this knowing some things about music because I was playing piano at the time. Like, I enjoyed classical music and stuff like that, but it wasn't really passionate. It was a sort of side hobby. It was not even, like, my main hobby. It was not even a part of me. It was just something I did, right? So, going into YouTube, when I was bored and COVID and blah, 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 and I was very tired, and I was like, man, what could I listen to? And I went to YouTube, and recommended to me was The Normal Album by Will Wood. And I clicked it. I don't remember specifically what happened, but I was hooked. I listened to that album every day for the rest of pretty much that six-month, like, semester. Like, it was, I think it was actually at the end of, it had to be the end of grade 9, because that's when I was kind of, like, there, and I kind of, it came out. It was very unpopular. It was very niche, specifically. It was like, no one really heard about Will Wood at this time. And I was like, this is really interesting. And I put a pin on it. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna listen to this later. And I did, and I did, and I did, and I did every single day afterwards. It was insane to me, like how I actually found something that I specifically enjoyed that was my own, right? It was the first artist that I sort of independently enjoyed. Like I said before, like it wasn't ever put onto me. It wasn't ever like suggested to me. It wasn't ambiently playing in the background. I chose to listen to it. And I chose to repeatedly listen to it. And what I found about this album specifically is it encapsulates a lot of the feelings I had back in the day when I was sort of this kind of, 15-year-old kid who didn't know what the hell they were doing with their lives, right? Who didn't really have identity, really didn't have a identity per se. They felt like they were already failing when they didn't even get started. That feeling still kind of permeated throughout the rest of quarantine and even afterwards. It still kind of is a homestead of my own persona today. The behind the mask of this radio persona is a sort of husk of a person who's trying to fill themselves with culture and life. And the Normal Album is sort of a encapsulation of that, I think. Just trying to be normal, which is the whole point of the album, in a sense. Like, the motif of being normal, what is being normal, right, is something that kind of echoes throughout the entire thing, right? Love me normally, right? It's the idea that, like, you know, even though we're pretty, like, generic people, we have to pretend that we have some sort of, like, semblance of a persona, right? And I feel like that's kind of what Will Wood also had to go through as an artist, right? He started it as a sort of a passion project, right? Called Will Wood and the Tapeworms, which was a sort of homage to those kind of 60s, 70s rock titles, those rock names, right? Like, you know, the Bee Gees, the Monkees, a few other ones. I'm forgetting, for some reason I'm stalling on the names, but you get the idea. Will Wood and the Tapeworms. What a disgusting name, but also very riveting and catches your attention. Putrid, in fact. Disgusting. Tapeworms. Yuck! Gross! Am I right? It's not like you have them in your body right now. Hey, chat, look down. Dude, what if tapeworms just started, like, billowing out of your stomach? Like, it's just like, ow, I bit my lip. That's what I get. That's what I get for cursing you guys with that specific imagery. Jeez, ow. Why did I do that? Ow. Anyway, besides the point. The Normal Album was the thing that got me through quarantine, got me through COVID as a whole, and got me through a lot of the stuff. Here's the thing, though, I didn't listen to it for like another, like once I think a year after quarantine hit, I didn't listen to it for like another 2-3 years. I didn't listen to that entire album for another 2 or 3 years until eventually, literally just today, I was like, Will Wood, I wonder what he's doing. I listened to this album and I was like, damn, it still hits. It somehow still hits. Even like five years later since I just initially found it on a YouTube recommended page. Like, it's insane to me how easy it is to access this music, and also specifically how far we've come, right? But I've talked too much specifically about my history on it. What is the actual album about, right? What does it feel like? It feels like a fever dream. It feels like, trying to be normal, even though you really aren't. right? It feels like it gives you that sort of 50s hillbilly, not rockabilly, that's what it's called. A rockabilly kind of blues vibe, with a lot of with its chord progression, a lot with its instrumentation choice, a lot of kind of bassy, but also at the same time very, very high upbeat rhythms and stuff like that. It's very unassuming, right? It's very unassuming. Like, Love Me Normally, right? It seems like it should be a normal song. But he kind of goes into this insane diatribe. Like, most of the songs, he goes into this sort of insane diatribe in between about how you're slowly going insane, how the world is, like, literally does not make sense, does not fit, doesn't fit you as a concept, as an idea. And at the end, it's memento mori. Like, it gives you the whole idea of how you could, like, literally die the next day, but how you should still make your life have meaning and find meaning within that life, right? It's such, like, I think the psychedelic aspect kind of embeds itself from not only its material that's basing off of, like, its actual, like, kind of kitschy vibe of the 50s, 60s era, of music, but also it gives you that kind of aesthetic of his earlier sounds, right? Because this is the transition of when he just became Will Wood. But Will Wood and the Tapeworms. Now, Will Wood and the Tapeworms had a way more verbose, a way more strange vaudeville, kind of almost theatrical musical vibes, right? It gave you that sort of encroaching feeling that you were falling in a well for hours, which is exactly the feeling you kind of want. It gives you that sort of sense of dread, but also gives you that sense of catharsis and enjoyment at the same time, because the harmonies, the rhythms are so good. I might as well just give you a little taste of them, just to give you and me a little more of a color, a bit more of a texture. So we're gonna be playing Dr. Sunshine Is Dead, which exactly goes into the more abstract idea, because this was 4 years earlier from the Normal album, which talked about specifically about fitting into society, how culture is kind of like tangled up in itself, right? Dr. Sunshine Is Dead, on the other hand, goes more into the idea of the identity of yourself. Are you even real? Can you change yourself even and still same the same person, right? Do your choices make you you, or do you make you you, right? So it kind of goes into that weird, eclectic art style of trying to assemble yourself together, but constantly falling apart, right? Which I feel like is also what he went through. But before we go into further detail, let's just listen in on Dr. Sunshine Is Dead. I will be the moon and I, who else could I be? When I can hardly see, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It goes so hard. My goodness. The samba sort of influence, the jive of the beat. Like, you could dance to this song and also just have, like, a sort of contemporary style to it as well. It's like, my goodness, man. He cooked with this. He cooked. He isn't cooked. He's cooked. Well, maybe both. Besides the port, right? Like, a lot of this song is specifically about kind of confronting the idea that you are not yourself. The idea that you don't have an identity, or the idea specifically that you've lost it and you cannot find it, right? It goes so hard, specifically. Meh. I do wish, and here's the thing, I do agree with you, Kai. I think there should be a karaoke episode sometime in the future. Like, that would be amazing, because you couldn't hear me because I was muted, but I was literally, if someone was in this room right now, they would hear me screaming the song. They would hear me belting it out right now, okay? Like, it possesses me. It possesses me to sing it every time, right? Oh, man. And the first time I heard this song with it, like, just today, too, I literally bawled my eyes out. Like, it was so cathartic for me. It's genuinely such a good tune. And here's the thing, right? Will Wood, I remember on one of his live broadcasts that I was listening to during, I think, 2021, 2022, somewhere around there. He has a Patreon too, by the way. So if you feel like you need to donate money to him to support the cause of making music, then go for it. Go for it. I might pitch in sometime or another. I'll have to get back into all the albums though, because there's still two that I have not listened to in the right now. So I need to listen to those in the future. But specifically on one of his live streams, he was talking about how all of his albums are sort of like his children almost, right? In the sense that you're kind of giving life to this new idea, this new concept, right? And at the end of the day, these are just kind of snapshots into somebody's life. They don't actually kind of articulate the entire feeling that they were pouring into it in the moment. So he kind of just views them. It's funny. He just kind of like mentioned how they were just like his children almost, right? Like he doesn't really kind of associate with them with them anymore. He just kind of gives them a little pat, go gets them along, lets them go to college, whatever, lets them graduate, lets them get into the ears of new fans that might, in fact, jive with his music, right? It's quite an interesting concept. I think a lot of it is an idea that I think is very cool. I think that's a very good outlook to have with your music, because it's not, you're not tied to what you did, it's tied to what you are, right? Again, which is kind of like the whole idea of the album. It closes off with the most beautiful singer-songwriter phrase, like kind of passage I've ever heard in my life-ish. The album starts with self, and then the end is ish, because the album is called Selfish, right? So it kind of, it leaves you with that kind of an ending closure at the very end, which is very cool. But it kind of gives you that kind of haunting passage of specifically finding your identity and realizing that you are just who you are in the moment. And whatever happens in the future is also you, but a different you, right? You are constantly changing at the same time. You are not just tied to one static moment. You can constantly change and grow and adapt, right? It's very, very haunting. And it kind of gives you that kind of ending closure, too. If dreams can come true, what does that say about nightmares? So good. It's kind of like the everlasting motif within this thing as well. It's baked with goodness, deliciousness, treats. And I'm scared for the new albums, because I'm swear to God, I'm going to cry to them. I'm going to bawl my eyes out to them as well. Trust me, it's not going to be a good look. But give him a listen. Will Wood has a very, very prolific catalog. He only has five albums, right? Three of which I've listened to. What were the ones? Everything is a Lot was the first one. Then Selfish. Those were with his And the Tapeworms kind of epithet. And then new ones, the Normal album. I think the next one was In Case I Make It and In Case I Die. Those were the additional albums, kind of reflecting each other. And I think that was his last album. I think that's kind of what made me kind of turn away from him as well, because eventually he's realized that he didn't like making music in the capacity of being a singer-songwriter, being a kind of personality, right? He didn't like that idea. So he kind of went off and did his own thing. He started making that kind of contract work specifically with other people, and also collaborations with other artists as well, such as Schaefer James, which I believe I've talked about before on the show, maybe during one of the D&D themed episodes. Besides the point, Schaefer James is also a very good singer-songwriter that I'm a really big fan of, who did a very cool single called The Riverman, the Ferryman, right? Kind of catalogs a bunch of the different ways that people backstab each other, which is really cool. It's a very, very cheesy album, but also a very cheesy song, but also a very, very catchy song. I like it a lot. Which I might play next. We'll see. Besides the point, we need to get into my next development as a person. So once I eventually kind of passed on the torch of Will Wood, his time kind of fell to a close, and I was like, well, what else is there, you know? So I started exploring a little bit. I got a lot into, you guessed it, System of a Down. Now, here's the problem. I don't know if King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard came first or System of a Down came first specifically. Because I knew in around 2021, I was extremely bored again. And it had to be. Because I remember specifically doing a coding assignment, which was actually a small, like-ish game jam for my final assignment for computer science class in grade 11. And I was like, damn, I don't have any good, like, I need to stay awake for this, because I was pulling, like, a very late night, and I needed something to make sure I can get my stuff done to. So I was like, what's this metal album? Because I think I got into metal before, especially with, like, the Doom soundtrack and stuff like that. And it was my first foray into nu metal, and I just love System of a Down. Love Mesmerize, specifically. Lost in Hollywood, all those kind of cool hits. It's not their main titular song. I love the original. I love the self-titled album as well. What were some of the things I had in mind specifically that I wanted to talk about there? Because it kind of all permeates within the same. It's within my lore is what I'm trying to say here. My lore dictated that I either listen to System of a Down, which then formulated my opinion of King Gizzard, or my King Gizzard formulation then formulated System of a Down. I don't know which one came first. That is the issue, right? So we can actually see real quick. What was one of the songs? Radio Video? Good one. Very good one. B-O-I-B, that's also a very good one. They switched out the damn soundboard again. I was gonna say one of them, but I need to make sure that I'm muted here. One sec. Whoa. Here we go. There it is. Yay. There it is. Okay. Violent Pornography. There we go. That's another good one. Like, all these songs are very kind of like against the system in a very specific way. All of them have their own specific ideas of all these songs have their own ideas of what culture has become now and what kind of parroting the idea of all this kind of stuff. It's very interesting. I like System of a Down a lot, which then I think formulated my idea of King Gizzard. That is the lore we're going to go with. If it's the other way around, sorry, my brain got it wrong. And I'll apologize in a big Twitter thread. I mean, X the everything app thread. No, it's disgusting. It's gross. Get it out of my freaking mouth, man. Get it out. Yuck. Anyway, so my friend, by the way, shout out to Miles, my boy. If you're listening to this, big shouts out. Because he got me back in 2021-ish, 2022 maybe, after I think one of our Dungeons & Dragons games. He got me into King Gizzard and Elizabeth through Nana God Infinity, which was in fact the thing that was on my Instagram, if you were curious. The big old nine-sided shape with a bunch of little strings attached to it. It is in fact the Nonagon, which is one of the main symbols of the King Gizzard universe, which we'll get to very soon. A lot of it didn't really click with me specifically. I was like, okay, it's fine. And then obviously, like, I had like the already kind of I wasn't like put off by it, was what I'm trying to say, because Will Wood kind of formulated my taste for this kind of eccentric, very bombastic and high energy music with a lot of sort of lyrical madness tied up to it as well, right? So I didn't listen to it for a bit. I think a couple months later, I re-listened to it again. I think after I listened to System of a Down and got into them as well, then I got it. Like, it finally clicked for me, and I was like, I was in, right? Then I listened to Omenum Gatherum, which is a collection album that of all their sort of albums that didn't really make sense to go into the other albums. And then I started listening to the rest of the catalog, which I was really excited to get to, because guess what? As of today, there are currently 27 albums of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. They do not stop for anybody. They are constant engines of ingenuity. They, no matter what, they continuously pump out new albums at least every year, right? I think it was like an average of 2.7 albums a year, which means by 2050 they should have like around 100, which is crazy to me. Absolutely insane, right? No matter what genre you're into, no matter what kind of style you're into, even if you don't like psychedelic rock, there is going to be something for you here. Because the main thing about King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard is that they do not care. They do not care about those limitations. They do not care about those pesky borders that doubt shall not be crossed. They embrace them. They love clashing with different genres, styles, you name it. Like, they literally, last album in Fly B741 made a blues album. The next one, they made one with strings and orchestral bits, which I also loved, which was a B-side to B741. Then, a couple years ago in 2022, they made a thrash metal album. They made a synth pop album. They've made countless other ones. Like, it's insane to me how prolific their catalog is and how willing they are to continuously experiment with their sound. Some artists specifically, which I will get to soon, wink wink, Tame Impala, kind of have a sort of vibe and they stick with it, right? They're like, okay, this is our vibe, this is what we're going to be doing, and this is it, right? This is what we do, right? We do the kind of grungy guitar. We do like kind of sort of like a more punk aesthetic. We do sort of a more groovy disco aesthetic, right? They kind of lock in to one specific mode, right? And obviously King Gizzard and Lizard have their own little quirks, right? Everyone makes kind of a funny little joke about them going, "Woo!" constantly in their songs, no matter what genre they're doing, whether it be a nice groovy disco album or perhaps a more upbeat blues album, right? They always do their little woo, no matter what. You're always going to get a woo. You're always going to get a woo. You know what I'm saying? You're always going to get woo every single time. Every single time. Count them. Count them. There was someone who counted them like a couple years ago. Count them. Make sure you count them. So specifically what is the appeal of King Gizzard, though, right? Because obviously you have the albums, great. You're always going to have something that you like. Okay, cool. But, like, why would you want to listen to the rest of them if you're a fan of psychedelic rock? What would be the thing that kind of gravitates you towards listening to the rest of their 27 album catalog, right? Because here's the thing, it's kind of hard to talk to people about this specific genre itself, but also this specific band, because a lot of it's like King Gizzard and what now? King Wizard and the Lizard Gizzard? Like, what are you talking about, right? Like, I feel like a lot of the stuff is kind of way out there, but at the same time, very accessible. I say that, but it is funny that they had to get rid of their Spotify. All their Spotify songs on Spotify. I have to listen through Bandcamp now. I only got back into them like a couple weeks ago because I was able to actually buy their albums on Bandcamp, right? They got rid of all of their albums on Spotify because apparently the CEO is spending $500 million on war drones, on bloodthirsty battle drones aimed for death and destruction of humans. Isn't that cool, guys? We love investing in technology that kills people. Isn't that cool? Hey, look, there's a bunch of artists that are funding your business, right? Spotify. Oh, great. You know what I'm going to do with that money? I'm going to spend it on war drones. I'm going to spend it on bombs. You know what? I'm just going to spend it on bombs. You guys. Boardroom meeting. What if we spend all of the money that we've accrued from this? Not paying... No. Paying the artists? No, what the hell are you talking about? What the hell are you talking about, Robert? Get the hell out of this office. No, we're going to be spending it on war drones. We're going to be spending it on war drones. Jesus Christ. I'm losing my mind. This needs to be stopped anyway. Obviously, they wouldn't support that because a lot of their albums have a more so, what's the word, anti-war, very environmentalist, human rights pivot to it. As woke as it may be, has a lot of those kind of semblances of being against this sort of machine that keeps peddling out, keeps feeding people's greed. Specifically in my favorite album, Petrodraconic Apocalypse, which is the telling of a story of some sort of motor spirit that the... It's very nice characterization as well, because they sort of worship the oil as their god almost, right? This sort of false idol of oil, of industrialization, of doing this sort of thing that allows them to feed into their greed, right? And then later down the line, obviously, a lot of crap happens with Supercell, Converge. Then Witchcraft hits. And it talks about specifically how they were attempting to patch it up using magic, using witch magic, which is kind of like the idea of patching up, you know, our mistakes with like simple fixes, like whatever small fixes we could try to do, but don't really amount to that much in comparison to like the actual real fixes we need to fix the world, right? And then further down the line, they accidentally turn one of the lizards into a oil-hungry dragon, the Gila monster, in fact, which then turns into a dragon after it drinks a bunch of oil and spreads its wings, and then it destroys the entire world in a fiery ball of flame. It's fantastic. I love this album so much, because it's kind of a cautionary environmentalist tale, but also it rips. It's just a very good thrash metal album. I really do enjoy the throat singing on peak, harmonies, fleek. I'm telling you, man, like, they do not miss. Like, most of the time, they do not miss. There are some albums that I'm like, meh. I know they're for somebody, but they're not for me, right? That's the best part. You know there's a good artist when they can make a song or songs that are good for some people, but not for everybody. Because you're obviously going to try to focus on a specific group. If you're trying to cater to everybody, you're going to make sludge. You're going to make gunk. You're going to make mush, right? If you want to make art, if you want to make something that actually is meaningful, you have to take a stance. You can't sit on the fence, buddy. Sorry. It's just how it is. Right, with these kind of things. So, here's the thing. We're running out of time. I do want to talk a little bit about Tame Impala. So, we're going to veer into that real quick, and then might recap about Silk Song, and then we'll end it there. And I might play some cool King Gizzard music to end us off. Sound good? Ladles and germs, let's get right into it. So, Tame Impala specifically is interesting to me, because it is probably the most popular of the psychedelic rock groups, right? It feels like this is like the most well-known, the most mainstream one out of the rest of them. Because obviously Will Wood was very slow to accrue an audience, but is like sitting at like around 1 million monthly listeners, which is crazy to me, because it was, like before it was like at 100, like it was probably like 100k, not even 90k, when I started listening to them back in 2021. King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard kind of had a pretty good solid standing, perhaps 2 million. They are obviously off the radar now, but obviously you can listen to them on other platforms. That's not going away anytime soon. Spotify was probably their most, but they're not getting that much money from it anyway, because Spotify pays for so it's like, whatever, right? Tame Impala is probably like the most popular of those ones. They're sitting at around like, I think like 30 million monthly listeners. I'm pretty sure Tame Impala is sitting at like 30 million monthly listeners. Let me check. But I think a lot of these, what's really interesting too, 43 million. It makes sense too, because they came out with a more recent album called Deadbeat, which I haven't listened to yet. I've only listened to Current and The Slow Rush, because I think those are ones that kind of like got me into them. And then afterwards, it kind of just falls off. Because the main problem I have with this idea is that it's the same. It's the same style. It's the same style throughout. He's good at making music, don't get me wrong. Like, if I need something to zone out to, if I need something to have something in the background while I'm working on something, or if I'm, like, world-building for D&D, stuff like that, something that'll just kind of, like, get my mind jogging, but also keeping me in that headspace, definitely Currents is a very good pick, right? Currents is a good album. It's a very solid album. Like, it has a lot of good songs. Like, Past Life is really good. I feel like it has a bit of that story narrative element that I kind of wish was in a lot of more of his songs. And a bunch of those other ones, too. I feel like, again, this is the one that a lot of people know. So I'm treading on a murky water here. So I don't know specifically what other people believe about this album and what people believe about Tame Impala as a whole. What people hold near and dear to their hearts. Whether they like other songs compared to me, whatever. Let It Happen is a very good opening as well. I do like the 7-minute runs. I think it gives them a lot of cool space to play around with. New Person, Same Old Mistakes as well. Love Paranoia. Bangers, absolute bangers. Like, I think these songs have a lot of that sort of, again, stylized, goopy synth sound to them that kind of is a keepsake of psychedelic rock as a whole, right? It's interesting, too, because, again, these guys are also Australian. A lot of this psychedelic rock came out of Australia recently within the past, in the past 2010s, you know? Like, a lot of these artists came out of the woodwork from this scene, from a lot of the kind of experimentations that were going on within the scene. And there's probably not a lot to do in Australia beside Kangaroo. Right, am I saying? Right, am I right? Right, man. Right. Some honorable mentions. again, I have to censor these. I think I talked about them before. So, Tropical Storm is a fantastic album. I mean, a fantastic artist, fantastic band. I love their songs, specifically A Laughing Death in Meat Space. Banger. And the more recent one, Goon Show, it kind of had an unfortunate naming, very, very funny timing, specifically with what came out recently. But it kind of also makes sense in the context, too, talking about, like, oligarchs and people, like, wanting to rise in power and using discourse as a vehicle for that. It's a very, very nice album to listen to, especially when you need to get your anger out at the system, man. And also Psychedelic Trumpets. I didn't like them at the start. But I slowly got into them, right? It kind of, like, it grows on you, like lichen. You kind of have to sit in place and listen to it a couple times before it finally clicks with you, right? I think a lot of their cool songs, like Found God in a Tomato, specifically with, what was that one album called? Shoot. High Visceral. There's another one, too. I forget what it was called, but they come out with new albums. They're kind of as frequent as King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard. Not as frequent, but they come up with an album at least once a year. So it's always something new, always something fresh with them. I always enjoy listening to them. I think a lot of this stuff also, it's twofold, right? One, it gives you sort of this fun out-of-body experience that gives you that sort of catharsis you need to take on the rest of your life, your day, etc., right? And also the idea of... psychedelic rock as a whole, including Will Wood, as much as he's kind of like a little bit farther off into the more like, you know, vaudeville musical aesthetic to it. A lot of these kind of artists have the same ideas, the same implementations of what they want to talk about, right? The same kind of key points with the King Gizzard, it's environmental issues. It's with... it's also very cute because some of the albums are about how... Stu McKenzie, which is the main guitarist and singer, has a child. So it's kind of like a few songs about how, like, parenthood and trying to take care of a kid, which is very, very grounded and very sweet, I think. It's just relatable in a very, very esoteric way. Like, something that you wouldn't talk about or you could articulate normally, they are able to articulate, right? This sort of, like, insanity that you kind of reach when you've realized that your identity is a bit like a bit more like taffy and less like concrete. It kind of gives you that sort of reassurance in a way, you know? Like, it gives you that sort of reassurance, I think, at the end of the day. One more mention. Moses Gun Collective. I also love their music. I haven't listened to them in a while, and I won't listen to them right now because, you know. But I think Mulberry, I think it's called, or Strawberry. I forget which berry it is. But those songs are banger. That one album they released is banger. I think they're just literally a one. I think they just released one album, I'm pretty sure. Hole in the Wall is also banger. Back in the Womb, also very banger, right? It's very catchy, very more disco than anything else, but also has like a bit of that rock as well aesthetic to it. It gives you that groove that you are looking for in a sort of groovy genre, in a sense, you know what I'm saying? So if you want groovy, you go to King Gizzard and the rest of those psychedelic rock groups. If you want more aesthetically pleasing and also more, what's the word? Musical aesthetic, more vaudeville themed, go with Willwood and Willwood and the Tame Worms. So it's your choice. Take your pick. I have a whole collection here for you. I'm the guy from Resident Evil. What are you buying? And I just have a bunch of EPs strapped to my chest. What are you buying? What are you selling? King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard's pretty good, I have to admit. But listen to a lot of their albums. And Leon's just looking at him like, what the hell are you talking about, man? I just want to save the girl, man. God damn it. So, that's pretty much time. Honestly, I did not expect the time to go by this fast. I didn't really have that much of a script going into this, but I feel like I talked about a lot here. Again, Will Wood and King Gizzard were like kind of like the main things that got me into music as a whole, which was very insightful, very fun, and very explorative, because I can experiment with a lot of things within music that I wouldn't have gotten normally if I just gotten into music kind of like the old pop standards, you know what I'm saying? The same four chords. I feel like there's a lot more color to be had when you look more deeply into the sort of alternative scene as a whole. I think it kind of gives you a lot more experience, a lot more color. It's bad music, but it's good music. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Oh, wait, it's me. Hold on. Like that. Like that. Exactly like that. I'll make my own music with this. Don't worry. Don't worry. I want to make a new intro theme, but I don't have enough time. Maybe I'll make it orchestral. Wouldn't that be funny? That'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. We'll see. Either way. Take care, everybody. Next week, we'll be talking about something. I still haven't figured out. Maybe another holiday episode. Maybe another Silk Song. You guys like Silk Song, right? You guys love to hear me gush about Silk Song. But no, I think we'll be talking about something else. Probably video game related once more. I wanted to talk about specifically because I finally played Undertale, which is really funny to me because I literally was such a fan of Undertale, but I never played it for like the first 10 years it came out. And then finally I played it in 2025, which is insane to me. And then also another pretty cool meta game. I wanted to kind of analyze those meta games and figure out what makes them tick. You know what I'm saying? What makes them kind of evocative in that sort of fourth wall breaking sense. So there's your beans on toast. Am I right, British? Am I right, British? My British audience? That's what I meant to say. My British audience. Beans on toast! And an independent incidentals! I love beans on toast, thank you! Thank you so much for noticing me! I feel so seen, am I right? Where was the... My yum, yum. I got something stuck in my teeth. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Oh, jeez, it's my gums. Oh, it's bleeding now, isn't it? Oh, bloody hell, what's going on?
I don't know if you can understand anything I'm saying right now.
I'm gonna go now, okay? You guys stay put. I'll see you next week. Love y'all. Oh, yes, of course. And the playing out songs, of course, will be from the Will Wood collection, as it were. We're going to be listening to a few songs from The Selfish, including Kotar Solution, Mr. Capgrass Encounters a Secondhand Vanity, Tulpamancer's... This is the same title, by the way. Hold on. Capgrass Encounters a Secondhand Vanity, Tulpamancer's prosopagnosia / pareidolia as a result of trauma from First Form Gyrus, and also The Song with Five Names, a.k.a. Soapbox Tau, a.k.a. Checkmate Atheist, a.k.a. Neospace Government, a.k.a. You Could Never Know. I hope you all enjoy, and I'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.